Tonight's guest speaker is Karen Truder, a local resident and nurse practitioner discussing the hot topic, as you all know, understanding memory loss, prevention, and treatment. So relevant, right? Karen fills the role as nurse practitioner in the post-acute specialty services at Northumberland Hills Hospital and acts as the primary lead of gerontology assess and restore intervention at Northumberland Hills Hospital. Karen clearly has a passion for geriatric rehabilitation and restoration based on her multiple advanced learning opportunities, and I looked through her CV, and there are multiple ones, I can assure you, and direct work in this area of expertise. She belongs to multiple professional groups such as Ontario Rehab Alliance and is a member of the Canadian Gerontological Nurses Association. As you can see, Karen has the experience and expertise to lead tonight's talk on understanding memory loss, prevention, and treatment.
Thank you. So, first of all, to explain my work in the post-acute services, specialty services, and that's restorative care if anyone has been in the hospital. And I work with the most frail. And I actually counted up today that 13 out of 24 of my patients at the moment are over 85. And we are providing comprehensive gerontology assessments. So that means we look at the whole person. Most have come into the hospital either because they're sick from a pneumonia or something like that, or a fall. And we look at deep down into the cause of some of their illness or their falls or their frailty. And we really try to uncover the details of what is happening. We always say a fall is a symptom. And a symptom of what? Very rarely do older people, well, unless it's winter, slip or trip. A lot of the falls happen because either they're unwell or they're becoming more weak for some reason. And we do the digging. And I have a whole team that work with me, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, and we all bring our assessments together, and then we're able to make recommendations, be able to make goals of care, how to return better, return home better. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine that the older the person is, the more difficult that becomes. But one of the things that I've always felt is that it's almost too late at that point. And we're trying very hard for these people, and we have some great successes. However, I felt that if I could share this knowledge and this my expertise and experience with people who are younger, then we might actually be able to prevent frailty, unfrail some people, and have people living more well into their long futures. So I was very pleased and excited to be asked to speak to this subject tonight. So the first question I'm going to ask you, and I'd like to hear from you, what is memory? What does memory mean? What does memory mean to you?
Recall.
Recall, yes.
Memories.
Memories, yes.
Some of your experiences.
Yes, experiences, absolutely.
Learning.
Sorry?
Learning,
yes.
Connections with different parts of
it. Right, so memory is connecting. So you can sometimes connect with your past, yeah, or connect with a really lovely memory of something, and it could be triggered by something else, yes.
Understanding situations?
Yes, understanding. We need memory and memories that we've learned to make understanding, absolutely, yes. So memories are what makes us who we are. So the science people say that it is encoding memory. I've got it written here because I can't always remember. I'm over 50, you know. So encoding information, storing the information, retaining the information, I think someone said that, and then recalling it, which we also spoke to at the beginning. I'm very much more of an art nurse, and I like to think that these memories make us individual and unique. We all have lived a fair time, and we have become who we are because of our life experience and our life good things and bad things, have made us who we are. Our interactions with people, the way we were raised, our siblings, our in-laws, our in-law children, have all added to the person of who we have become. So I like to think of it that way too. So I'm just going to do a little bit of anatomy. It's very, very quick and big words, but you don't need to remember them. But it just helps to put some things in context for a little bit later in the talk. So there's explicit memory. And these memories are the ones of events in our life. What we're aware of and what we can recall. So we've mentioned some of that. It might be something like a special time we've had with a good friend. It might be the smell of cut grass by the cottage, or when you broke your arm, or a fabulous vacation, or it might be how you felt when you were married, or when you graduated. And I'm just going to interject here. So all those letters at the beginning was a bit of a show-off, because I actually gained all those letters quite late in my career. I've been a nurse for 36 years, but I did the old RN diploma way back when in England. And when I came to Canada, the nursing degree, the baccalaureate degree, was becoming the base education. And I thought, I'm not going to get a job, because when I was looking for full-time work, it said degree preferred. And I thought, I'm going to just do this. So I did the baccalaureate while I was working. I got a job, by the way. While I was working full-time through Athabasca University, which is an online university. So I did that. Well, by the time I finished, because I did another palliative care qualification alongside it, it took me 5 years. By the time I finished, it was now basic education, and I thought, well, I'm no further ahead. So I took a summer off, and I did my master's and nurse practitioner. And I actually graduated in 2013. So I'm in my 7th year as a nurse practitioner, and so I can tell you that I graduated as I turned 50. So it can be done later, and I tell the nurses today that, so that anyway, that was a little aside. So there's explicit memory. Now there's also implicit memory. Implicit memory is an unconscious memory. It's also our motor skills. And priming. And I noticed there were some smiles when you saw the little baby here. And that's exactly what priming is. We're primed to react to somebody smiling, to a cute baby. And advertisers love that. They use that priming memory, that's implicit memory, to sell their things. So this would be things like when you learn to speak as a child growing up, you learned your language. Mother tongue, if you were, and others have learned a second language or a third language. That might be more explicit because you had to work at that. Learning to walk, learning to ride a bike, learning to brush your teeth, learning where the keyboard is. And now we have computers, so a lot of us can just type away and not look where the keys are. That's what we would say is an implicit memory. And word association. So if I was to say bread, what would be the word association? Quick one. Butter, right. That's word association. So that's an implicit memory. So this is an example. So an implicit memory is you're able to say the days of the week. But an explicit memory is you've got to remember that you have a dental appointment on Wednesday. That's the explicit. So we've been talking about long-term memory here. And you can see there's the conscious memory, explicit, and that's separated into events and general knowledge of the world. And then implicit, unconscious memory is priming, that the advertisers love that, and motor, procedural, doing buttons up, riding a bike. Now we're going to look at short-term memory. Sometimes short-term memory is referred to as the post-it memory. It's short notes to help us remember something immediately. So short-term memory, it might be 2 or 3 seconds. So if you think you want to take down someone's phone number, they're a second or two ahead of you because they're saying the number while you're writing it down. It might be 10 to 15 seconds. So if you're reading a book, you're remembering the beginning of the sentence as you're getting to the end of the sentence. And then it might be also, I love this, I read this. You might be in an argument with someone, and they're saying something to you, and you're going to remember that because you're just about to come back with an answer. That could be your 10 to 15 seconds. And then there may be just a few hours when you go shopping, you want to remember where you parked your car. But you don't need to remember where you parked the car tomorrow unless you're still searching for it. So here's some of the big words in the brain. And the hippocampus is one I'd like you to try and remember. So how do we sometimes remember tools we use? Some of it might be a picture in our mind of helps us to remember the words. For me, I think of a hippo camping in a tent. I don't know. Anyway, so the hippocampus, which as you see this red circle, is that blue wormy thing in the middle of the brain there. That is the center for episodic events, remembering new memories of events. And it was first thought that that was our center for memory. However, in 1953, there was Henry Molaison had severe epilepsy, and he had his hippocampus removed to control the epilepsy, which it did. It was a successful surgery. However, on follow-up, they found that he could no longer remember any new information. He could no longer store new information. However, he was also, though, able to improve motor skills, so he was still remembering, although he couldn't remember how he remembered. That makes sense. So the scientists have discovered that there are more centers that hold our memory. So the neocortex is that outer layer of our brain. I usually with my patients and families describe it that it looks like a cauliflower with the florets, like a whole cauliflower with the florets and the little rivulets in between. And that layer is the neocortex. And the scientists believe that this is where we have our sensory perception, so smell, touch, sight, hearing, where we store language and spatial reasoning. In other words, we can see things in three dimensions. Scientists, as you can see at the end here, feel that new memories are temporarily stored in the hippocampus and transferred to the neocortex as general knowledge. And here's the key. There's more study going on, but they believe that these memories are transferred into more longer-term memories during the time we sleep. So just here's a few other words. We're just going to go very quickly through these. The prefrontal cortex, that's the green area at the front of the brain. This is where our short-term memory is stored, planning and decision-making. The amygdala, which is this little purple thing beside the blue worm in the middle of the brain. That is where emotional significance is added to memory. So there's a very interesting new research going on around PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. I like to say post-traumatic stress injury because I believe that it can be treated and people can be relieved of those symptoms. And they believe that this is where fear association is developed in this area. And the cerebellum, which is at the back of the brain here, is for those fine motor skills. So that helps you to do up a button, helps you to hold chopsticks. That's not so easy. Also, if you play a piano, you might touch the key very, very lightly. And that's where these memories of those fine motor skills. And then the basal ganglia, which is that purple pill thing, looking pill, I don't know what it looks like. Anyway, right in the middle there. That has our habit-forming memories, movement and learning, and our coordination. And this is the area of the brain that is damaged with Parkinson's disease. So we're going to move into how we're going to protect our memory and maintain our memory, because this is really what I want to talk about. We know from normal aging, so as babies, we do much, much learning from babies to toddlers, but we don't really remember our learning. I hope we don't remember toileting, for instance, becoming continent. And adolescence, this is the time and where the prefrontal cortex, that green area in the front of the brain, is really, really active. New information is going in there. They're in school, they're in college, they're in trade schools, they're learning all the time, and they're developing into adults. The ability to plan the future improves, and they can process so much more information. And so if you have children, grandchildren, encourage them to do their schooling in this time. They'll learn, learn, learn. You can do it later, but it gets more difficult. And then as adults, I'm sorry to tell you that in our 50s and 60s, our ability to remember new information does start to decline. So I was going to ask you, because I think most of us in this room are over 50. There are some, I think, below 50, but most of us are. And so can you think of any examples where you felt like your memory has kind of declined a little bit? Names, remembering names. That actually, that's way before 50. Some people never remember names. Yes. Anything else that people can think of that has they noticed to change?
Computer instructions.
Computer instructions? In what way?
Remembering what to do.
Okay. So if there's some time, if you go on vacation and you don't use your computer, and you come back, and can you remember the password? Right. Anything else?
Postal code.
Postal code. Okay. Especially if you've recently moved.
Phone numbers?
Phone. Oh, phone numbers. Yes.
Especially if you live alone.
Ah, okay.
You can't remember your own.
Yes.
Where you left your reading glasses.
Where you left your reading glasses. Yes.
You remember stuff from when you were 20 and you can't remember what you had for lunch today.
Okay, so this lady said that you can remember what happened in your 20s, but you can't remember what you had for lunch today. Okay, so short-term memory.
What you went downstairs or upstairs for.
Right, so absolutely. And you know what? Look, why did I go downstairs? That happens to me all the time in work, and the nurses and the people I work with just laugh at me. I sit in my office, I'm at my computer, I need to go and get a patient's chart. I walk out of my office, halfway to get to the chart, someone speaks to me about something, so I deal with that, and then I think, now what did I come out here for? I retrace my steps, and as soon as I look at my computer, yes, that's what I wanted to do. It's normal, actually. It's okay, it's normal.
Good exercise, too.
Sorry?
Good exercise.
I get my steps.
A bit of distraction.
Totally. Yes. It's distraction. And distraction is one here we put there. So distracted and then need to retrace your steps to remember. But you remember when you've retraced your steps. Misplaced car keys, glasses, same thing. One of the things is really irritates me is I go shopping and I forget the thing I wanted to get and I get home and then I remember I forgot what I really wanted. It's so annoying. I tend to now have to go down the aisles in the same order because I know where things are, and if I don't go in that order, I'll miss it, especially in Costco. And another thing that we sometimes find less able to multitask, I find that, you know, I used to be able to do this, that, the other all at the same time, and now I can't. I think, you know, I've got to focus a minute and just, and so that, but it really is all normal. This is normal aging, and we just need to adapt the way we do things to help us. So we're going to be looking at that. Now, this is my work in the hospital. As I mentioned to you, I do a comprehensive assessment, and we do a deep dive into the person's life and experience. And this is what we're looking for. We're looking for reversible causes of their decline, their functional decline, their memory decline, or their frailty. And so this is really what I look at, medications. There are medications that can make you forget things and cloud your mind. Stress is a big factor. I don't know, stress, and I'm going to put grief alongside that. If you've gone through a major grief, you can't think. That's why you have leaders and friends and church friends that bring meals to you, because you just can't think. And stress is another one. I say to my husband, remember, I filter things, and it might be the wrong thing because I've got too much in there right now. Head injuries, depression. I put anxiety and depression together there because they come together as we get older. And depression can actually present sometimes as anxiety, and that obviously can cause memory loss. Alcoholism can severely damage the brain and affect mental abilities. Medication and alcohol mix. And hypothyroidism. So for some, if their thyroid is not working efficiently, that can actually cloud the mind and not have the not thinking so clearly. It's absolutely something that I look for when I do a blood screen. So I do a comprehensive blood screening. I call it my geriatric screening. So to really try and uncover any of these things that we can correct. And the other one at the bottom is vitamin B12 deficiency. So many of you might be on B12 pills, injections once a month. The one that's not always remembered to be tested is folate. Folate and B12 come together. They're both vitamins. And both of them, if they're deficient, can cause some memory loss. I wanted to share this with you because this is really exciting. And it's fairly recent. I think it's in the last 5 years. They realized that hippocampus that makes new memories is actually continuing to produce neurons. And what's really, really exciting is that this Stockholm study, and these scientists in Stockholm were looking actually at an antidepressant response, antidepressant feeling, if you were, they call it the runner's high. So when you exercise and you have those, we call it the endorphins are flowing and you feel good. So they were studying that with rats, and what they found was that the hippocampus in the rats that did exercise for 5 to 8 weeks grew, in fact, against the rats that didn't do exercise. And now this research and study going on. And I see Dr. Gardner Nix here, who may well be able to assist me with that. But in fact, there's evidence that the hippocampus, we can grow it, and we can increase our storage of new events in our life. So if we exercise. So this is what I really want to talk about. How can we protect our memory and prevent it from getting worse? And there's all these things that we can do. We talked about vitamins. I would strongly urge visit your physician. Talk about the things you're feeling. Some people don't like to talk about it. They're scared that, what if I have dementia? But please express it, because there's many reasons why your memory may be not working as well. And it could be reversible. And if you don't talk about it, you don't get it reversed. So please express it with your family physician or nurse practitioner. But the things I'm going to talk about here is sleep, exercise, and grow your hippocampus. That's the only thing you remember tonight. That's grow your hippocampus with exercise. Not smoking, and socialization. Because I believe that with those, the other things can come along. Sleep is vitally important. If you remember, the scientists have said that there's that transfer of memory that they believe happens in sleep. Sleep hygiene is what we in medical fields talk about. And what that means is it's really looking at sleep, going to bed at the same time, using your bedroom for sleep. Actually, I would say use your bedroom for sleep and sex, nothing else. Not your office, not your computer. Not for things that will keep you awake, but sleep. go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, and we all need about 7.5 to 8 hours sleep. And so you can actually diarize this, put it in a diary, what time you go to bed and what time you wake up. And if you wake up, you count the hours, 7, 7.5. And you'll find over time it's only 7.5 all the time, 7.5. So that can actually help you to think, what time do you want to wake up in the morning, then backtrack it. And don't go to bed until 7.5 hours before that, or 8 hours, and you'll probably have a good night's sleep. One of the things I notice at work is I come in the morning and the night staff will say to me, oh, I've been up all night. Since 2 o'clock, I can't get them back to bed, they've been awake. And I'll say, well, what time did they go to bed? Oh, well, they went to bed at 7 o'clock, because there's nothing to do in the evenings in hospital. And they're bored, or they're tired, so they go to sleep. Their night's done by 2 o'clock. Of course they're up. They finish their sleep. So isn't it just an example of thinking about when you go to sleep? It's really important for the memories to be sorted out. The brain is amazing, and that's why we dream sometimes. And if you remember your dream, you usually relate some of the details to things that have happened in the day before, conversations you might have had, and it's your brain sorting out all the thoughts and the things that have happened during the day. So exercise. I cannot speak enough of this. Now, I showed off again about the weight loss. Exercise is really important for your brain as well as your muscles physically. And what do I mean by exercise? I don't mean going to the gym, signing up and doing all weights and the treadmill and all this sort of exercise. The recommendation is 30 minutes per day. And that can be divided up into 10 minute slots. So even if you did a 10-minute or 5 minutes, 5 minutes to start with, if you can do 30 minutes over a day, that's your exercise. And it's walking. Exercise is walking. Vacuuming, doing the housework is exercise. That actually can be quite vigorous exercise. And so you don't need to have a sign up in the gym, an expensive sign up. You can do this in your home. You can do this at various places, and I'm going to have a list of places with resources of where you can go. But exercise is really, really important, not just for strengthening your legs to prevent you from falling, but also strengthening your mind. Smoking is damaging to our blood vessels. And I've just been told I have 5 minutes. So I really thought I wasn't going to fill the time. So if you can stop smoking, that will be very, very, very helpful, even in later in life. And socialization, again, I can't speak enough of this. It's great that you've all come out to this. To be sociable with other people. Social isolation is being researched now as a very damaging thing, to be on your own and to not speak to people for days and not meet people. And so really important that if you're finding that you're starting to cocoon, and winter is dreadful for that, start to think, how can I continue to get out and meet people? And again, we'll have some resources at the end. So just briefly, and how do I know if I have a problem? I could do another whole talk on dementia, and so I'm really leaving this to a short section at the end here. How do I know I have a problem? Now look at these sentences, very different to the memory loss that we talked about earlier, because we were able to retrace our steps and we were able to remember. Here it's asking the same question repeatedly. We don't remember that we just asked that question and we don't remember the answer that was provided. Difficulty planning or solving problems. Getting lost in your familiar town, in your area. Can't remember how to get home. Sometimes personality changes. We may see that someone is not the very nice, sweet person they used to be. Or withdrawn person, they used to be outgoing. And then things like being hard to read, judging distance. That's that visual memory of being able to see something in a cube. Now suddenly this floor doesn't seem even to me, or a wet floor, shiny floor might look wet. These are all symptoms of dementia. So dementia is an umbrella word. It's a word that covers a number of different types of dementia. And I've listed a few, four main dementias, and then we're also seeing this mixed dementia. So someone might have Alzheimer's disease and a vascular dementia if they've had a stroke, heart attack, heart circulatory issues. Diagnosing dementia, there's careful medical history. Talked about that, that's what I do. So we do need to make sure that we know about medical history, the life story, our memories, our events, things that have influenced us is very, very important. To rule out reversible causes of memory loss, and the cognitive tests, clock drawing, all those, some of you may have gone through those tests where they ask you to say sevens backwards, I can't do that. But spell word backwards, world backwards, I might be able to do that. And those, so those cognitive tests. And then there's brain imaging, CT, MRI as well. There is new genetic testing that is in clinical trials right now, and it is an a blood test that is identifying Alzheimer's disease. It is really new, it's in clinical trial, it's not available to the public yet, but I am told by a geriatrician that it may be available in about a year. And these are for people at risk for Alzheimer's disease, if there's a family trait, a family history. And so that's really exciting coming along. So I talked about where you can find help. And this is help for if you're having memory loss and you're concerned. There's visit your medical physician or nurse practitioner. In Coburg, we have the family health team. If you're speaking to your physician, you can ask them about the senior assessment team. They are in the mall in Coburg. The Port Hope Community Health Centre, here, there's the GAIN team. And people in Coburg are also referred to the GAIN team. This is the Geriatric Assessment Intervention Network, similar to work to what I do. And they have a community team that go out and assess you in your home as well. And then there's the local Alzheimer's Society website, alzheimer.ca. And I just want to show you First Link. First Link is excellent service, referred to by your practitioner, and it is someone who comes to visit you in your home and can talk to you about how to manage a spouse, a loved one, a parent with Alzheimer's, with dementia, and can give you tips and tricks on how to manage that. Really, really helpful. I refer families to this all the time. There's also Community Care Northumberland. They have a wellness program, exercise, and friendly visiting. And so this is for people, if you have family members with Alzheimer's disease or further advanced dementia, these people are extremely helpful. And again, you can contact through your practitioner and even phone them up. Phone them up and just talk to them, and they will help you. And then for those of you who really want to grow your hippocampus, there's the Coburg Community Centre. They have a fabulous track that goes around the ice rinks at the top. They have a senior centre, I think it's $20 a year to join, and they have all kinds of activities and exercise classes. Ruth Clark Activity Centre here in Port Hope. There's the Coburg Y and Port Hope Swimming Pool, Jack Berger Centre. So these are all areas that come the winter, you could be indoors and still exercise and keep that walking going. One of the worst things I find is patients admitted to me towards the end of winter in functional decline because they have not been able to carry on their walking. There's no excuse. We have it in both our towns. So in summary, this is a summary of really what I'm talking about. Exercise your brain, education, but reading, crossword puzzles, anything to keep your mind active, volunteering, socializing, okay? Socializing and having hobbies and friends. So doing, keep active, and you may grow your hippocampus and